Hello, my name is Jared.
And my name is Elle.
And you are listening to the New Leaf Project. Elle, we've got another episode that you've recorded here. Can you tell us just a little bit about what we can expect?
Absolutely. I loved this episode so much. It was such a pleasure for me to sit down with Wendy Jansen, who is a friend, but she is the founder and pastor of Burning Bush Forest Church. She's an ordained pastor in the Mennonite Church in Eastern Canada. So she actually still does half-time work there, working with people who are starting these, I don't know, what would you call it? Eco churches, these wild churches. And she's also part of an organization called the Wild Church Network. And so I got to sit down with her and interview her about her church plant, how it started, how it's grown, how the network started, and how it's grown very organically, and the ways in which established churches are using wild church principles to reinvigorate and renew their existing congregations. This is a beautiful episode from a beautiful person, and I really encourage you to take a listen and maybe listen to it again, because there's some real gems in here.
All right, let's give it a listen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the New Leaf Project. I am joined today by someone I know you are going to really enjoy getting to know and hearing about something called Forest Church, specifically Burning Bush Forest Church. So Wendy Jansen is here with us. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to speak with me, Wendy. We are heading into a season, getting ready for our conference, The Table, talking about a shared feast, nourishing hope for a flourishing future for the church in Canada. And when I've known what you've been doing for a long time, but I think in the last few years, for myself personally, I've found in my own discipleship and my own sense of what it means to go to quote unquote church or participate in a worshiping community, this idea of Forest Church and the work that you've been doing is just even more interesting and compelling to me, as I know people have connected in with Forest Churches across Canada and really across North America. And so it's so exciting to be able to share this story of the work that you've been doing. So for those who don't know you, maybe we should start off with just, can you just introduce yourself a little bit, who you are and where you're coming from today?
Sure. Happy to do so. So as you've said, I'm Wendy and I live in Kitchener, Ontario. And more when I'm in settings talking about what I do, I like to say that I'm from the Grand River watershed and to introduce myself in relationship to the land, not just to, you know, the municipal names. Because I think it helps to reorient ourselves a little bit to thinking differently about our connection with place. So I live in the Grand River watershed in Kitchener-Waterloo, and I am pastor of Burning Bush Forest Church for 7+ years. Prior to that, I was a pastor in a Mennonite congregation, and I continue to be an ordained Mennonite pastor. And as part of this whole journey to starting Burning Bush, I also got involved in founding the Wild Church Network, which I think we'll probably talk about at some point. I have a husband and 2 teenage boys and a cat.
A very cute cat.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the pleasure of petting your cat, which for those who know me know I love animals. So yeah, that's great. Why don't we start the conversation maybe a little bit? I'm not totally sure what came first. Did the Wild Church Network come first, or was it Burning Bush Forest Church? Maybe you could kind of share a little bit about that journey and how you came to start this.
Yeah, sure. I love telling this story. So back in 2014, when I was pastor at St. Jacob's Mennonite Church, I had a 4-month fall sabbatical. And my learning focus for that sabbatical was the emerging church. St. Jacob's is like 170 years old or something. And so I was really curious to find out what was happening in new church plants, outside of the box kinds of churches, and not because I was dissatisfied with my work at St. Jacob's, but because I wondered what I could bring from, you know, what was happening out there into this setting. And I thought maybe I could be a bridge between the established church and the emerging church, or the new church, or whatever terminology you want to use. And so during that fall, I was visiting all sorts of different church plants and young congregations that were doing things, you know, in new or different ways. And at the same time, during that fall, one of my neighbors across the street pulled me aside one day on the sidewalk and started a conversation with me. She said, you know, I am done with church. She had grown up in a Mennonite church in the area, had attended church her whole life, was married with kids and had been attending with their family. And she just said, I'm done. I just can't sit in a building any longer listening to people talk. And that, you know, that was what she described her church experience to be. And as a pastor, my first response, I'm embarrassed to admit, was to be a bit defensive and go, oh, but, you know, church is more than that. And, you know, you have to put something in to get something out. And I realized I needed to shut up. I needed to listen to her experience and to her feelings and yeah, just see where this conversation is going to go. And she said, yeah, I'm done with going and sitting in a building for church. I'd rather go on a hike on Sunday morning with my family, because that's where I feel closest to God, is out in nature. And when I heard that, it was like, oh yeah, she is not the only person I know who would say something like that. And, you know, if I was honest enough with myself, I could probably say the same thing. That nature has always been a place where I felt really close to God. And so I listened, and she would add, you know, more to the conversation. Like, it would be nice to do this with other people, not just me and my family. Or it would be nice if there was something more than just a hike. And she didn't articulate or express exactly what she meant by something more at that time. But I was reflecting on this conversation that I was having with her, because it seemed to be a recurring conversation. It came up a few times. And so at one point I talked to my spiritual director about it. And my spiritual director said, you know, something more is almost always code for God or the divine or the spiritual. And this conversation really felt alive to me, like it was something I really needed to be paying attention to. And there was something going on that I couldn't exactly put my finger on. So I just continued to listen. And then sometime after that, my son was enrolled in a forest school program. And one day I went to pick him up from forest school, and it was like an epiphany, like such a classic, you know, it could have been filmed in a Hollywood movie, epiphany where a light bulb flashes. And it was like, oh my goodness, if there can be such a thing as forest school, could there be such a thing as forest church? And could this be what this conversation with my neighbor is pointing to or is about? And if the listeners don't know anything about forest school, it's a fairly new thing where children are taken out into a natural area, and over time get to know that particular area and are invited into inquiry-based learning to follow their curiosity, and to see nature not just as a place that they go, but as their teacher, really. So it's different than outdoor ed. The children have a sit spot. They're encouraged to sit quietly, you know, for 15 or 20 minutes, just paying attention. They sort of learn subjects without realizing they're learning subjects, as they are learning about uh, their the beings that are around them and the geography and all sorts of things. So I wondered, yeah, how could this apply to church? How could church be, you know, not just transplanting a regular church service outdoors, just like Forest School isn't just transforming or transferring a regular classroom and a regular curriculum into outdoors. So what would that look like? What would it look like for nature not to just be where we're worshiping, but, you know, could nature, could creation, you know, to use a Christian terminology, could creation be our worship leader and our co-congregants? And it just really excited me to think about this. And my mind was just racing, you know, so fast as I was imagining what this could look like. And it didn't take long before I thought, oh, I should Google this just in case I'm not the first person to come up with this idea. And there were, in fact, as soon as I put Forest Church into Google and hit enter, there was a website that came called Mystic Christ, based in the UK. And there was, I think, about 15 groups there that were practicing Forest Church at that time in 2014. And one of them, Bruce Stanley, had published a book called Forest Church. So I ordered the book. It came in the mail. I read it cover to cover, and I found it super intriguing and exciting. I talked to my neighbor about it. She was fascinated. And then I thought, okay, I'd love to try this, but, you know, it's late fall. We're heading into winter. How do you do this in Canada? Sure, you can do it in the UK. They have a nice moderate climate all year round. But then I knew that once my sabbatical came to an end at the end of December and I went back to my church in January, that I'd get busy and I probably wouldn't follow up or do anything. So on the last Saturday of December, the last week of my sabbatical before I was going back to work, I phoned up my neighbor and said, you know, tomorrow I think my family and I are going to go out to a local park. And we're going to have a forest church, our own little forest church thing. Would you and your family like to join us? And she said, yeah, sure, we'd love to. And she said, could I invite some other people? And I said, sure, of course. And so with less than 24 hours of planning or notice, we had 15 people gather for an outdoor forest church service in December. And there was snow on the ground. It was cold. But we had a lovely, lovely time together. And afterwards, kids played in the snow and adults stood around talking. And it just felt like, this really struck a chord. This really, really felt like, felt like God was present, and it was a really meaningful experience. So that's the origin stories of how Burning Bush came to be. And then as that progressed, then about a year later, I started to find out other people in North America who were doing similar things, and we started the Wild Church Network. I just talked for a long time. Sorry.
No, yeah, that was perfect. No one wants to hear me. We're here to hear you. So that was excellent. I have two questions, but let's talk about what a gathering or a service or however you would, phrase that. What does that look like? When you said earlier, it's not like taking a traditional church service and transplanting it into the outdoors. So for those who've never experienced an outdoor burning bush, you know, kind of service, what does it look like?
Mm-hmm. So right from the start, we had a pattern that we used that I can't remember. I think it probably was... partially based on some stuff that was in that Forest Church book, but not exactly. But it starts with a gathering time. And so I've developed sort of a series of movements that could be called our own liturgy. So the opening is called Gathering and Grounding. And We gather together, usually in a circle, often standing. Sometimes people bring lawn chairs or there's logs to sit on. And we ground ourselves in God's presence and in the particular place where we're gathered. So looking around to see the trees and the sky and the ground, and then closing our eyes and listening to the sounds that we hear, breathing deeply to smell the smells of the forest, and to feel that exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide as we breathe in and breathe out and do that exchange with the trees. And then feeling the temperature of the air or the breeze or the rain on our skin, and feeling our feet grounding us and connecting us with the earth. And then moving from that space of connection into prayer, into an opening prayer that brings us into awareness of God's presence there with us in that place. Then we go into the next section, which is called readings and reflections. And we'll have a scripture reading and sometimes another quote or poem or something related to the theme for the day. And just, you know, a short, you know, paragraph, several sentences maybe, tops, to invite people into reflecting on that theme, an invitation to what the theme is for the day, and to reflect. Then an invitation out into the next section, which is called wandering and wondering. So people go for half an hour, usually shorter in the wintertime, of personal reflection, where they can wander through the park, the forest where we gather, paying attention to what they're seeing or hearing or feeling or thinking about the scripture, and wondering. So wondering about the things that are arising for them, or experiencing the wonder of being in God's presence in that place. Then we return back after that half hour for the a time of sharing and sending. And so around the circle again, or in small groups, we share with each other what it was that we noticed, what it was that we reflected on, how we felt God showed up, or what we felt we were being invited to take with us. And then we have a benediction. Sometimes we sing, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have communion or other rituals, sometimes we don't. But that's sort of what it looks like. And I'll just say that one of my colleagues in the Wild Church Network, Stephen Blackmer from Church of the Woods in New Hampshire, before the pandemic, one summer, I dragged my family to New Hampshire for vacation just so that we could go to church at his Wild Church. And he described, he had a very similar outline that he would follow for his Wild Church. And he said that their sermon is a three-part sermon. The first part is scripture. The second part is the listening during the wandering and wondering time. And the third part is the sharing back together. And so no one person has to come up with the sermon. It's shared through scripture, through the Spirit, and through creation, and through each other's voices.
That's beautiful. You've mentioned the winter a few times, and I can imagine that being outdoors is quite lovely in the spring and summer and fall, but I can imagine in the bitter cold of the winter, how do you adapt to that? And what do you do? Does it change, or do you just wear extra layers and I don't know, woolly socks?
Yeah, good question. So basically, I tell people to channel their inner 8-year-old and to dress the way, you know, your parents would have dressed you to go outside for playing in the wintertime. So yeah, boots rather than sneakers, snow pants or long underwear or whatever layers you have, a hat, a toque, and mittens, all that stuff to keep you warm. And then, you know, we really discovered, it wasn't something that I had ever noticed before, but in the wintertime, when you're in amongst the trees, they have a moderating effect on the weather in the winter, just like they do in the summer. So we know, you know, in the summertime, if you're standing out in a parking lot in the sun, you're going to feel blazing hot. But as soon as you get in the shade of the trees, it's more comfortable. And we discovered the same thing in the winter when we're standing out in the parking lot and the wind is howling at us and we're exposed, it's freezing. But as soon as we take the trails into the forest among the trees and the wind isn't blowing at us, it feels quite a bit warmer. And that was something I would never have paid attention to or noticed before worshiping outdoors. Then, you know, standing helps rather than sitting, shortening the wandering time, bringing hot drinks along. And generally it hasn't been a problem to meet in the wintertime. And I confess, here in Southern Ontario, we rarely get colder than minus 15 Celsius. But there are forest churches or wild churches in Saskatchewan and Alberta. So, you know, it can be done in even colder places. And I'll just say that one of the people who comes has said that she likes coming to Forest Church when the weather is what we'd consider to be less than perfect, because she doesn't need reasons to go outside in the spring, summer, or fall, right? She loves being outside, and she goes outside to walk or to be in her garden or whatever, camp. But in the wintertime, Forest Church actually gives her a reason to be outside. And there is something beautiful about being out in the winter. It's a different kind of beauty. It's a subtle beauty, but you really notice it when you are out there with that kind of intention. And there are also lessons that come from being uncomfortable that we wouldn't learn if we just were outside when we're comfortable.
So I'm thinking back to when you were describing how that conversation with your neighbor really changed things for you. And I'm also thinking of, at New Leaf, we've talked so much about the Dunns. It's something that's so near and dear to a lot of our hearts, because we know a lot of folks who love Jesus, love God, want to participate in something, but really struggle with the church as we know it and understand it. And so I'm just wondering, do you find that there are other folks who are quote unquote Dunns that seem more interested or willing to participate in Forest Church? Like, who are you gathering, and how? Yeah, I'm just wondering if this is an alternative for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say for sure it is. There are people who I'd say are Dunns, people who grew up in the church and left and aren't regularly connecting with a church in any way anymore. And it feels to them, I think, to be, just the less institutional nature of it. The fact that it's more multi-voiced, it's outside of a building, so it doesn't feel that same association perhaps for them with institutional church or whatever it was that they're leaving. So those are all things that I think make it that appeal to people who have left the church. And then there are also a good mix, at least half of people who do attend other churches. And then this is something that they're not getting, obviously, from a regular church. And I can't remember who it was on that same sabbatical that I mentioned earlier, when one of the books I read talked about people having a portfolio of churches or of spiritual experiences now, rather than just putting all their eggs in one basket. And so this provides a different kind of context for them to explore their faith in a more contemplative way than most regular worship services. Perhaps if they are a person who has a strong connection with nature, then that's there, obviously. So those are some of the things that I think make it feel different than the traditional model of church.
You had mentioned, I sometimes call it the Forest Church Network, but I know it's Wild Church Network. So can you kind of tell us a little bit about how that started then? Because it sounds like you've been a major part of getting that going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so About a year after that first Forest Church service that I led in the park with my neighbors, it took me about a year before Burning Bush actually launched. And so in the late winter of 2016, Burning Bush began to meet regularly on a monthly basis. And I decided to put that on my LinkedIn account. Don't know why. I was new to LinkedIn and I'd hardly used it. And to this day, I hardly ever use it. But I put it on my LinkedIn profile. And someone saw it. A person who I'd never met in real life, who works for the Mennonite Creation Care Network, saw that. And she asked if I would write a little blurb about what I was doing for their newsletter. And my initial reaction was, no way. Ask me a year from now after we've been doing it for a while and I might have something to say. But at this point, we're just starting. I'm not sure, you know, exactly what I write. And she says, oh, you have lots to write. And I think it would be interesting for people to find out what you're doing. And, you know, who knows? So I did. I wrote a little blurb. And as a result of that, I got a few emails from several people, but one in particular was from a woman in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And she had been thinking about similar things, and so had her sister, who lived in California. And her sister had, in fact, started something she called Ojai Church of the Wild about 6 months earlier. And so the three of us got together on Skype, I think, pre-Zoom, and, you know, just shared stories and were really excited to meet each other and to find out there were other people who were feeling a similar calling to do church very differently, to get outside of the building and to not just try to replicate the way churches have always been, but to engage God and spirit and creation all together in a new and different way. And so we continued to talk, and we each, you know, knew of one or two other people that, you know, we had met at conferences or in various ways, you know, the ways these things happen. And so we started having Zoom calls. By then, I don't know, someone heard about Zoom way back then, 2016. And we started having monthly Zoom calls with about six of us to talk about what it was we were doing, you know, how to deal with accessibility, how to deal with weather, how to deal with children, how to deal with dogs, how to promote things. What about liability? You know, just so many questions when you're creating something brand new. And also just, what are you doing? You know, how are you doing what you're doing? What resources have you found? Are there any books out there about this? Who's writing them? And yeah. Just that sort of stuff. And so it didn't take long before we started finding out more people and other people. And I think, I can't remember if we created a website first or a Facebook page first, but it just started to grow and gain momentum. And we debated what to call ourselves, and the term Wild Church Network came up. Forest Church didn't feel appropriate because most of the groups weren't meeting in forests. And to differentiate, I guess, ourselves from the group that had already been going in the UK, even though they're very similar and there's so much overlap. But we chose the Wild Church Network. And from six people in 2016, it has grown to over 150 or 60. I'm not sure what the exact number is now. And totally organically, like without any strategy to grow and plant more churches. It's just been people all feeling the nudge or the call or learning about the Wild Church Network in some way and going, oh, yes, this is what I've always been longing for and I didn't know it. There's a map on the Wild Church Network website and people are looking, oh, is there one near me? And so it really developed a life of its own. And it's been exciting to be part of something like that, that, you know, I never envisioned myself as being a church planter or an innovator or someone who would start a network called the Wild Church Network. Not myself start it, co-found it, you know, with these other handful of great, amazing people. Somehow, you know, the Spirit just invited me into this, and it was too compelling to say no. And it's just been an exciting, exciting thing to be part of. And the Wild Church Network certainly has a variety of expressions within it. There are wild churches that are part of high church denominations. So that Church of the Woods I mentioned earlier is an Episcopal expression of Wild Church. To groups that are not associated with any denomination, and ones that have a hard time using the word church or using the word God. But we say that in the Wild Church Network, there is something in the Christ story that is at the core of who we are and why we gather.
That is fascinating. That is so interesting, especially for so many organizations that, and not that numbers always matter, but the number, you know, that are seeing that dwindling, mm-hmm. and for this Wild Church Network to be growing. What, you know, you touched on this a little bit talking about some of the duns, but why are all these people having this, like, what's your hunch? Why are all these people from such different walks of life or different theological, you know, expressions? Why do you think they're all having this kind of moment all together in the same kind of time?
You know, I think there's probably a variety of explanations. I think in this post-Christendom world, there's lots of reasons why traditional church isn't working in the ways that it used to. And so people aren't necessarily finding their spiritual lives nurtured in the ways that they're looking for anymore. But they still have, you know, spiritual lives. They still have desire to know God and to be Christ followers, but it's just not doing it in the way that is meaningful for them. So that, you know, in that context, connected to post-Christendom, I think there's just this openness for other expressions. And then I think that there is also something that we as modern North Americans or Western culture folks have become so disconnected from nature, from creation. We live 90% of our lives indoors, and we've forgotten, or we've lost that sense of being part of creation. We think nature is something out there, and we forget that we are equally created to be part of nature, that God created us as part of these ecosystems that we live in. And there's something ancient. You know, the Bible was an outdoor book. And I love a quote by Wendell Berry that says something along the lines, to paraphrase, I think it's not appreciated enough just how much an outdoor book the Bible is, and that it's best read outdoors, and the farther outdoors, the better. Because passages that indoors seem improbable, outdoors seem possible. And so the Bible is this outdoor book because at the time it was written, people lived outdoor lives. And so these, you know, things that we read in scripture that we just think of as metaphors were more than metaphors. I think there was this sense of animism in creation that we've become afraid of, that we've labeled as non-Christian, but that I think is at the core, really, of God's presence in the world. And there's this ancient part of ourselves that has forgotten that, and that when people go outside and hear scripture read outside and pray outside and pay attention to the trees and the birds and the ground beneath their feet and the stream flowing by as they're hearing the scriptures read and are invited to listen to God there, it brings us back into this ancient, you know, place that where God is present outside the box that we've created for God.
Well, that's a great answer. How have you, by participating in the work that you're doing locally and then being a part of the Wild Church Network, how have you seen all of that kind of change you or transform you in your leadership, in your, I don't know, in your walk with God? I'm just imagining that it's been quite transformative. And so how have you seen the ways that it's transformed you?
Yeah, so I was a pastor. I still am a pastor, but I, for 21 years, I pastored in traditional Mennonite congregations and in larger congregations that had multi-pastor staff. And I loved it. Those 21 years, I felt like it was my calling. And I loved leading worship. I didn't love preaching so much, but I did it. I loved connecting with people in the programs and pastoral care and walking with people when loved ones died and funerals. I loved all of that stuff, and I wasn't necessarily looking for something new or different. And I sort of saw myself as a shepherd or a management kind of pastor, a pastor who manages the flock, but not as a not as an evangelist, that's for certain. In fact, in perhaps in the Mennonite world that I grew up in, the branch of Mennonites, evangelism wasn't really talked about or played up. It was, in fact, maybe a bit suspect. We were the quiet in the land, and you just kind of go about quietly living your faith, and that was it. But somehow when this journey began, I felt like I was becoming an evangelist. I felt this compulsion or this excitement, this passion bubbling up within me that felt like I could talk to people about God working in this way in my life. And in this expression of church, that was just so new and exciting that, that was a big transformation for me. I'm an introvert. And like I said, you know, I was happy just in the regular old church. And, this has propelled me, beyond my wildest dreams into new territories and, into another level of passion for faith and church and God's activity in the world that I hadn't anticipated or couldn't have manufactured myself.
Mm. Thinking about that line that we're kind of focusing in on for the fall, nourishing hope for a flourishing future for the church in Canada, how do you see the work that you're doing integrated into that? Because to me, from the outside looking in, it looks like good news all over it. And I'm just wondering, how do you see that integrated into what the future for the church could look like?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I talk to people about the Wild Church Network or Forest Churches or whatnot, I often say, you know, when there have been reformations in the past or these, you know, big chaotic shifts in the church, new things have emerged, but it hasn't necessarily meant that the old church died, right? So during the Reformation, the Catholic Church was reformed and there were all these new Protestant denominations that formed, but the Catholic Church continued to exist and it reformed itself in its own ways and had to do its own work as well. Similar than with the Radical Reformation where Mennonites grew out of, didn't mean that the Lutherans and the Calvinists and all those denominations disappeared. They continued, but there was another new expression. And so with this, you know, Wild Church and other things that are happening at this time in history, it doesn't mean that the churches that exist aren't going to continue to exist. I think that there are deaths happening, and death is always difficult to deal with, but from death comes new life and resurrection. And as people of Christian hope, we should, you know, be able to trust that process, as hard as it is. And there will be some churches that die, but there will be new life that comes from that. And there will be some churches that find renewal and new life in the midst of all of this. But I think that the existence of forest churches and wild churches help us to realize that there can be radically different expressions of church, and that you don't have, that's not the only, the existing church isn't the only option. There are other ways of doing things, and there are other ways of connecting with God and worshiping together. And in my work, so I haven't mentioned that more recently I've started a position with Mennonite Church Eastern Canada as eco-minister. And in that position, I'm learning about existing congregations who are interested in either applying some of the lessons I've learned from starting Burning Bush Forest Church and working with the Wild Church Network to their traditional context. So looking at different ways of not doing a sermon, perhaps every Sunday, or stuff like that. Or who are also interested, in addition to what they're doing, to offering something like Forest Church on a occasional basis, not only for their members, but for members of their communities to participate in. And so I invited people in my area church to come to a meeting to see if they wanted to form a wild church ministerial among Mennonites to talk about, you know, how they can do this sort of thing in their own context. And that's grown now to include Mennonite churches from across Canada and North America in our own little Mennonite wild church ministerial thing. And it's been exciting to see how many existing and traditional congregations are really curious and interested in exploring something along these lines in their own context as a form of renewal, as a form of outreach, as a form of exploring, you know, new and different ways of being church.
That's a lot of hopeful stories that you have of good things that are happening. So I so appreciate that. I know in our show notes, we will have like links to your website and to the Wild Church Network. But is there anything else in terms of resources? If someone's listening to this and this is kind of sparked for them that they might want to try something new, or as you were kind of describing an existing congregation that's kind of thinking that maybe this would be a good addition to what we're doing, are there any books or resources or things that you would share that people could check out?
Yeah, so one of those first two women who I met after that article was published with Mennonite Creation Care Network, one of those women was Victoria Lures. And she has published a book called Church of the Wild, How Nature Invites Us into the Sacred. And it's fantastic. I've led a couple book studies with it, and people find it very compelling. It has some fresh takes on scripture. It describes the wild church movement. It has some appendices at the back. And so I think it's one fantastic resource. And she's in the process of pulling together and compiling a second book published by Broadleaf Press that will be more of a resource book. In addition to my Burning Bush Forest Church website, where I've put a lot of resources, I've also published resources on the Common Word website, which is a Mennonite Church Canada online resource center. And the online resources are available for free to anyone to download. So that's another one. And, you know, there have been quite a few books that have impacted me. I think of the writings of John Philip Newell and Diana Butler Bass's book Grounded, and Barbara Brown Taylor's book An Altar in the World and Learning to Walk in the Dark. Both, all of those books have influenced and shaped me on my journey, and there'd be plenty more. But I'll leave it with those maybe as some highlights. Oh, and Christine Waltner Painter, she's more of a liturgist and whatnot, but she wrote a book called Earth, Wind, Water, and Fire. I don't know if I got those in the right order exactly, but it's practices of praying, Christian practices of praying with the elements, or something like that. And that's another wonderful resource for thinking about engaging with creation as we pray and worship.
That's great. Well, we'll make sure we link to all of those in the show notes. Someone just gifted me Church of the Wild, but I've been listening to Learning to Walk in the Dark on Audible. And so I highly recommend, if you like Barbara Brown Taylor, she also has a beautiful reading voice. So it's very lovely to hear her talk about this. And I've been listening to it while going on walks. So yeah, I do love me some BBT for sure, for sure. Well, Wendy, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be here with us and to sharing these important stories. We're just trying to nourish some hope for what's to come and for those who continue to try to follow this path. So thank you for the faithful work that you're doing. We really appreciate it. And thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun to talk with you.
That was Elle and Wendy in conversation about Wild Church. Elle, thoughts? What's sticking out for you after that interview?
I am a big fan of Wendy. We had her as a part of the Learning Center for a number of sessions talking about Wild Church and outdoor, the connection back into creation. I'm so intrigued by this. This concept, there's a book, we mention it in the interview, called Church of the Wild, How Nature Invites Us into the Sacred. I just think there's something profound happening in a number of places, and perhaps it's just my connections, but I have found a number of people who have struggled with traditional church settings or have struggled with their relationship with that, but are still deeply interested in the Jesus story. And really actually find there to be an incredible sacredness. They have profound spiritual experiences when they are outside in and amongst the community of creation, of God's creation. And so I just think it's fascinating that these church plants all across North America, all across Canada, I know there's one in Hamilton that Eucharist Church has been a part of, like they keep popping up. I keep hearing these stories of people just... And it's not necessarily taking a completely indoor service and just putting it outside, but it's actually letting creation be our teacher and let God's presence that's already there just become more manifest to us in beautiful ways, slowing down, paying attention. I think there's something a lot of new leafers are kind of coming around. Gosh, I love when an idea tickles my head. It's my favorite. I can sit and listen to exhaustingly long audio podcasts, and I love my brain being tickled, but I'm also becoming very interested in the ways that faith and those ideas are embodied and what that's like for us to be embodied people present in a place. And so I think there's something really beautiful about this Wild Church network that is growing. I think the way that Wendy shares the organic growth of the Wild Church network, as it's just these groups of people who are rooted in the Christian tradition, who are, you know, scripture and worship are such integral parts, but it's different. They're not focused on dogma, perhaps, as some people might be. They're not as focused on the doctrine, but on the faith experience, and that their trust that as they gather, Jesus is present among them, and they will know that in profound and deep ways. So I just think there's something very interesting in our Canadian context to see people headed outside into creation in the middle of minus 30 degree weather all the way to the beautiful sunshine in the summer, and finding God there and finding renewed faith. And so I appreciate how vulnerable Wendy was in her sharing of how it's renewed her faith in some ways of being a part of this and watching other communities catch on to the spiritual experiences that we're longing for are happening outside. And so I think there's just something really beautiful. And it's a story to, in my opinion, to pay attention to, because my hunch is that more of these kinds of communities are going to pop up, or existing communities are going to utilize some of these principles as part of their regular acts of worship.
There is something, you know, very deeply embedded in Western mindset. We imagine that the most important thing about ourselves are the things that we think about. And that's certainly important, and it's part of being human. The things we think, the things we believe, affect all kinds of aspects of us. But that's not all we are. And there is a beautiful corrective going on that I think the Spirit is leading the church into, which is inviting us to live as creatures. It's, you know, one of the things that we believe about God, one of the unique things that Christians believe about God, of course, we share this with many other people too, but is that we think that God created everything, and that our creatureliness is actually, our createdness is actually a very deep and important way for us to connect to God. And yeah, I agree that I think that this is something to pay attention to. I think this is a healthy, healing corrective. And I know my brother-in-law, my sister, they're both, their whole family, they join in with Wendy quite a bit. And it's a seriously important experience for them in their ongoing journey with Jesus. And I know that myself, there is something irreplaceable about being in the created world rather than the constructed world. And I think that there's something really, really powerful that Wendy and friends in the Wild Church Network are onto. We're going to have lots of links to Wild Church stuff in the show notes for today. So if you want to follow up with them, that's the best way to do that. But Elle, there's lots going on around the New Leaf Network table these days. Let's talk a little bit about some of those things. What are some of the things we got going on?
Yeah, we've got a few things happening. So learning parties are back up and running. So check out the website for that under events. They'll be hopefully coming to a town near you. If you would like to host one, get in touch with us. We can help you get that going in your local context, kind of local conversations and bringing people together to kind of talk about the things that they're trying and what they're seeing at the local level. We're taking a swing again at a national conference, the table reboot. The table 2.0, I don't know what we're calling it, just the table yet again, maybe. And so that's happening October 12th and 13th in Waterloo on site and then online. Hybrid accessibility is a commitment of ours going forward. Online experience will not be an afterthought. It will be thoroughly integrated. So if you cannot be there in the flesh, we would like you to be in the flesh online with other communities and people from communities across Canada. We've got some amazing speakers lined up, a call for papers. Yeah, it's going to be a really important moment as we come together to talk about the flourishing future for Canada. We want the church in Canada to flourish. We know we want that to be a part of our story, that we are healthy and whole and embodied people. And so we're going to have conversations about that with practitioners and theologians, and also just together to hear the local stories of hope that you are having in your local communities and find a way to surface the genius that exists when we come together and to be renewed and restored together in community. And I know you're working on a few things. You want to share those?
Yeah. So I'm working on a new podcast, sort of a YouTube serial, maybe even a feature length documentary on multivocational ministry in Canada. I am walking this out personally in my own life as I transition from denominational leader to local church planter. And so I want to give you a behind the scenes, behind the curtain access to what this looks like lived at the ground level. I think more and more pastors are going to be walking out their calling in this way, in this mode. There are good ways to do this and bad ways to do this. And I can tell you so far with my experience, I'm probably going to be sharing a little from column A and B there. And so I just want to invite you into that. But also, you know, I think it's important to begin addressing something else we've got going on in the New Leaf Network. And that is, I think there's probably been a number of rumors maybe circulating. I don't know what you're hearing out there about New Leaf starting its own denomination. We're going to become our own denomination, and we're starting a denomination, rumor has it. So Elle, can you say just a little bit about that? I'll jump in here too, of course. True or false, New Leaf Network is becoming its own denomination.
That's false.
Correct.
Yeah. It's false. Ding, ding, ding. But is New Leaf maybe, since its ethos is incubating and helping folks start new things, is it maybe incubating and helping folks start new things? Well, yes, that is maybe true.
Yes. Yep. There are a group of New Leafers who are wanting to work together in a very deep and spiritually familial way, organizationally working together. There's a lot we're going to say about this. We're going to do a whole episode on this, but I just thought it'd be good for us to address some of the questions we get asked a lot. I certainly get asked a lot in Free Methodist circles. Is the New Leaf Network starting its own denomination? The answer is no. That New Leaf Network is going to continue to fulfill this function that we have in the Canadian Church of nurturing the new, supporting and cheering on people who want to start something new. We've done it many, many times before, not denominations perhaps, or whatever this new thing is going to become. I'm not even sure that's the right word to use. We've done this in a number of ways with a number of different groups, a number of different projects. This is probably one of the bigger things that we've ever been involved with. But we're here to try to support new things. That's why we have a podcast network. We want to help people start new podcasts. That's why we publish books on the Canadian context, because we want Canadians to write books. That's why we do all kinds of things that we do. We help somebody start a coaching group to help leaders live out of their own transformation. It seems logical for us to help a group of pastors who either through their own choice or the choice was made for them, have found themselves looking to form a new spiritual family. And so we're excited about that possibility. Elle and I are actually directly involved in this conversation, but this conversation is not New Leaf, and in some significant ways, but is very New Leaf in some others. So that's why it's false that the New Leaf Network is becoming its own denomination, but it's also kind of true that there is a group of people that are wanting to work together as part of the New Leaf Network. And we're, like I said, really excited about that. We'll tell you more about that in the future. We thought we'd just give you a little hint, a little taste of what's to come. And if you want to hear more, you can obviously email Elle or myself. And if you would like to join us at the table to talk and meet some of those folks who want to do that kind of work, that's great. If you are doing and feel called to your denomination, we want you to know that the New Leaf Network is not just has space for you. We want you to be a part of us. We want to continue to serve the Canadian Church. And so this is maybe a brand new thing, but it's an exciting thing. And we're grateful that the Spirit has landed this in the middle of our lives. I'm excited about what we have to share in the days and weeks to come. But just want to get that one out there and circulating, and we'll talk about it soon.
More to come.
Any final thoughts?
More to come, I guess.
More to come.
It's a good way to say it. Yes. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time out of your schedule to be listening to the stories that we're bringing to you, and the time that you spend to participate in the learning centers or learning parties, or hopefully the national conference, the table. So thank you for the ways that you love and support the New Leaf Network. You are us. We are you. We are together in this here in Canada. So thank you for your time. We never take it for granted.
Thanks, friends. We'll see you soon.